How long have you been with Pocketbooks?
6.5 years.
Oh, that's pretty good.
For publishing, yeah.
Yeah, for publishing. I did a story on publishing a few years ago. It was a feature, it was several years ago, in fact. It was a feature that ran during Morning Drive called Looking for the Great American Novel.
Uh-huh. That's my job.
So I decided to find a first novelist who had been published and go back and trace it through all of the steps of writing it and trying to get an agent and trying to get a publisher. He went through a couple of publishers. He went through NAL. I went through the Dial Press, and I think the Dial Press ultimately had collapsed. And all of his editors had left, and just trying to trace it.
Mm-hmm.
It took forever, and it was a fascinating process. But one thing I learned from it was that there was very little stability in publishing, that jobs seemed to switch on a yearly basis. I mean, it's upwardly mobile. I guess people are looking for better jobs and more money and this sort of thing.
Well, that's certainly true. But, you know, in recent days, with companies taking over and dissolving lists and so on, things are unstable for a different reason. People are cutting lists and cutting staff. So you can lose an editor that way, too.
It used to be said that books and publishing, that was an industry impervious to recession and depressions, but is that not the case today?
I don't think there's any aspect of American business that's completely impervious to recession. Books are generally regarded as an inexpensive and reliable form of entertainment, and so to that degree, they weather a recession rather well. But we've still seen some drop in sales and so forth. Secondly, we're competing with other forms of entertainment. The video and so forth are giving people a run for the money.
And yet they say more people are reading books than ever. That's almost a contradiction, isn't it?
That's true. I sometimes wonder if they're all reading the same book is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, you wonder, you see. These books printed by the hundreds of thousands, and you wonder, it's as if the publisher has dropped all of its eggs in one basket, you know.
Well, it's true. I think a lot of the big books now are a media phenomenon rather than certainly a literary one, although literary ones do still happen. But I think it's probably true that a certain segment of the population reads most of the books, reads a variety of books and reads widely.
Seems to me I read in Publishers Weekly some time ago that only 1% of the adult population will buy a single hardcover book in
actually,
a year.
Actually bought one and took it home.
Pronounce your name for me, Jane. Jane Chelius?
Chelius, yeah.
Chelius. And give me a little of your background. How does one become an editor of mystery books?
Well, I was an English major in college and came back to New York. I'm from New York. And I wanted to be an editor. I thought I was going to be the next Maxwell Perkins. And I hit the streets looking for a job. And where I found an opening was at Fawcett Gold Medal Books, which in those days was the very late 60s, was really the heyday of the original paperback. And many of the writers on that list were crime writers. And so one of the first manuscripts I ever read for them was a novel of John D. MacDonald's, and I thought, wow, I could get paid for reading this.
So where did you go to school?
To Duke.
And do they? But it was an English major. They didn't.
Yeah.
There isn't any such thing as a publishing major, is there?
No, not really. There are certain postgraduate courses that you can take that are of some 6 weeks' duration, given various places, that are publishing courses that just give you a very fast overview. But it is one of those industries where you have to pay your dues.
Mm-hmm. And, so your first job was with Fawcett Gold Medal.
Yeah.
How long were you with them?
I was with them for about 6 years.
And then you came to Pocketbooks.
Well, then I freelanced for quite some time while my kids were small, which is a thing you can do in publishing, and came back. I freelanced for Pocket for a while, and then I went to NAL for about a year, and then came to Pocketbooks.
How does one freelance?
Well, you can do various things, various aspects of the publishing process. You can evaluate manuscripts, which I did a lot of. You can edit manuscripts, which I also did a lot of. And I had a very nice part-time job in-house at Pocket, just reading and evaluating wonderful books.
How did it happen that you began to focus on crime fiction?
Well, I've always done it. It's always been part of my editorial life, and I've always loved it. But right at the point where I was moving from NAL to Pocket Books, Pocket had decided to start a mystery program. And so they said, go to it. It's yours.
So you've had more than a dozen years in publishing, focused primarily on crime fiction.
I would say so, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, according to the press kit here that I have, it says mystery suspense novels top the list of all fiction book buyers. Is that really true?
Well, yes. If you look at the bestseller list, there is a great deal of crime and suspense on it. I mean, various people regularly make the list with each book. Elmore Leonard is one. Sarah Paratsky is another. These are all crime novels.
I would assume that mystery fiction, that is the ultimate escape.
Well, yes and no. It depends on what kind of mystery novel you like to read. What we call the cozies, perhaps, can be viewed as a form of escape. Many of them take place in an England that not only no longer is, but probably never was. But you can also get, as with the novels of Walter Mosley, for instance, a look at a very real tour down a mean street.
When you say cozy, what do you mean?
They're sometimes erroneously referred to as tea cozies, and with the implication being that they're of English derivation. They are basically in the Agatha Christie tradition. They take place in a cozy drawing room where the inspector comes and says, round up the usual suspects, and deduces the murderer.
And then, of course, there's the hard-boiled.
Right.
James Ilroy, I think, is a practitioner. Elmore Leonard. The hard
right,
oil,
right.
Which seems to be uniquely American.
Well, it certainly began as American, but now with the tremendous flowering, I would say, of crime fiction, other people in other countries are also writing the hard-boiled sort of detective novel, as Americans are, in fact, writing the cozy.
Well, there's something in between. P.D. James, for example, is not quite a cozy and not quite hard-boiled.
Exactly. I think most crime novels now fall somewhere between those two poles.
Now, who buys most mystery fiction?
The audience...
According to the...
Is, well, it's... Without... It, we have never done any actual market research, so it's very hard to pinpoint. But I would say that the audience for crime fiction is generally a well-read audience to begin with, probably in most cases college-educated, and they're people who tend to read a variety of novels, not only crime fiction.
Who favors crime fiction, women or men?
They both read, and actually women and men tend to read both kinds, too. They tend to be rather Catholic in their tastes, although there are people who will only read hard-boiled or only cozies.
Are there any famous people that you know of who love mysteries?
Well, I believe Bill Clinton in a press conference said how much he enjoyed crime fiction and, in fact, mentioned Walter Mosley as one of his writers he was reading now. Barbara Bush has also said she's a great mystery reader. In fact, Jack Kennedy was a great devotee of the spy novel.
Well, I'm glad that Barbara Bush reads. I can't imagine George and Dan reading too much. I really can't. I just can't imagine Dan Quayle sitting down with a book and reading it. Can you? I mean, it just seems would be out of character.
Well, he'd probably have problems with the spelling.
Now, Pocket Books is doing something kind of interesting for this fall, and it seems to be a mystery tour. Can you tell me about that?
Well, this is a sort of a noble experiment for us. We are sending a group of our writers out to more than 20 cities as a group that sort of will form and reform among the six or seven of them who are going. And they write very different kinds of books with very different kinds of settings and so on. But in sending them in a group, it makes this tour rather more of an event than simply one author going out and signing books and so forth. And we hope that, you know, people who love and read Audrey Peterson's novels, quiet novels, which are set in England, will become interested in Sarah Shankman's really wonderful, raunchy Southern-type ones. And so we're hoping for a little cross-pollination there.
This is going to be like one of those mystery train rides?
It's a sort of wonderful mystery tour, yeah.
A real train?
No, I think they'll take more conventional forms of transportation.
You've heard about these mystery train tours, haven't you, where there's they have them in Canada. A matter of fact, Dick Francis wrote about 3 years ago, he wrote a novel about it, and that featured a murder on board a mystery train that also carried horses.
Yes, absolutely. It was a wonderful book.
Yeah, so, at any rate, that's not in the works. But how do you coordinate all of this? Sounds like a tough job. These are all your authors, right?
They are all my authors, but I did not have to coordinate this tour. The publicity department did that, and most of the authors are already experienced in doing these sorts of tours. They've just never done them together before.
So what happens? They go to a bookstore or something, and they each read excerpts?
They'll read excerpts, they'll sign books, they'll be able to talk to their fans who come into the store, and as I said, you know, meet the fans of the other writers and so on, and pique interest there.
Now, tell me, what kind of list does, of course, I can see the six books here that are involved in this press kit, but in general, how big a mystery list does Pocket Books have each year?
We don't have a set number of books, but I would say we publish roughly 10 to 12 hardcovers and upwards of 24 paperbacks a year.
Pocket Books has only recently gotten into hardcovers, hasn't it?
That's right. We, in one of the wonderful ironies of publishing, we celebrated our 50th year as America's first paperback house by starting a hardcover list.
As I grew up with Pocket Books, I remember vividly their logo with the kangaroo.
Absolutely.
The baby kangaroo reading a book out of its mother's
pouch. That's right. That's our Gertrude.
Gertrude?
Mm-hmm.
Which one, the baby or the mother?
The mother. I think the baby is as yet unnamed.
Now, so you've had, this fall, you've edited six books. Is that correct?
At least, yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about the editing. Well, first of all, tell me how you acquire a book from one of your authors.
Well, most times they come from agents. There are some agents who specialize in crime fiction, although at this point I think most agents have some crime writers on their list. And they send me the manuscript, and if I like it, we make a contract. And what we have done in most instances is to make a contract for two books, because in most cases in crime writing, we look for the creation of a continuing character. And in fact, every single book on this list, with the possible exception of the Sam Llewellyn, has a continuing character. What Llewellyn does is always have the background for his novels, international yacht racing, in much the same way Dick Francis uses horse racing.
What are some of the other motifs?
Well, for instance, Dallas Murphy, his new book is called Lush Life. His character is a New Yorker who, unlike the rest of us, doesn't have to earn a living because he has this wonderful dog called Jelly Roll, who supports both himself and his master by doing TV commercials for dog food. Very lucratively. Audrey Peterson's character is, like herself, an academic who's writing a book on Victorian England and goes to England to do research. Sarah Shankman's character is writing a book called American Weird, which takes her to Tupelo, Mississippi, and the home of Elvis, and she finds plenty to write about weird there. And the settings, as you can see, are extremely varied, each according to what goes on in the mind of the writer.
And what goes on in the mind of the editor, too.
Well, yes.
It sounds like you have an eclectic approach.
Definitely eclectic. We try to have something on the list for everyone, but since I like all of them, probably there are a lot of other people who will like all of them, too.
Now, when you get the manuscript, is there an editing process that goes on? You read it and confer with the writer?
Yes, of course.
Exactly.
Well, that's different in every case. It's different. One of the things that makes my job interesting is that sort of relationship is a little different with each writer, and different things need to be worked on in different manuscripts. Sometimes a great deal of work needs to be done in terms of replotting or improving a character or whatever. Sometimes very, very little.
But you can see this in the manuscript that it has possibilities that might be tightened in some
yes,
form or another.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, with more than a dozen years in publishing, you're practically a veteran in the field. Have you noticed any changes in the way mysteries are written or presented?
Well, we're certainly in the middle of an enormous boom in mysteries, what you might almost call a big bang, because they are, in terms of what's being written, they seem to be expanding in all directions. Certainly the rise of the woman crime writer has probably been the most significant and probably at this point the most written about development in the field. But there are a great many other things going on as well. Some of the trends we see, for instance, is an increase in historical mysteries. One writer I published told me that she thought the reason for this was that modern forensics have become so sophisticated and so exact with DNA typing and so forth that there is sort of very little room for the sleuth to be intuitive and thereby prove his or her brilliance in the way that they used to historically. So if you go back in history, you don't have to worry about DNA typing and that sort of thing.
Do you favor the amateur sleuth or the professional detective?
I think there's something to be said for both. I think they're both wonderful. Obviously, as a writer, excuse me, you have a little more leeway with an amateur sleuth because they can be anywhere, they can be doing anything with their life. But you have to be pretty creative in finding some way for your sleuth to trip over a dead body every year or so. Obviously, if you have a professional, either a private investigator or a policeman or something like that, in a sense, the crime comes to them.
Yeah, I always wondered how Angela Lansbury does it every week.
Exactly.
What can we look forward to in the future in terms of mysteries? Or can you hazard a guess? Or will it be business as usual?
I think the writers will keep trying newer and newer things. I think this is a form that seems to be almost infinitely expandable, one that can be made to serve practically any kind of writer out to write any kind of novel. I think we may begin to see in this country more crime novels from abroad because there are beginning to be some very interesting international writers groups that are concerned with crime writing. And some of our crime writers are beginning to be interested in crime writing elsewhere and to champion those writers here.
It's really an equal rights industry, isn't it? Because I've noticed that almost every other title is at least written by a woman.
Yes, absolutely. That is particular aspect of crime writing has certainly expanded. There is a group called Sisters in Crime, which I think has had a lot to do with that.
Isn't that Sarah Paretsky's group?
That's right. It was begun by Sarah Paretsky, Nancy Picard, Barbara Mertz, who writes as Elizabeth Peters and Barbara Michaels, and a couple of other women who realized that when women wrote crime novels, that they tended to be reviewed less, taken less seriously, and receive lower advances than those written by men. And they began this organization, which has set out to try to study these things and generally be a useful networking support group for women writers. I will also say it has men who belong to it as well, who are all for this cause too. And I think to the degree that they have focused attention on women crime writers, they have focused attention on crime writing generally.
I think publishing as an industry is also heavily dominated by women now, isn't it?
That's probably true, yeah.
It used to be like a gentleman's club.
Exactly. Well,
WASP only, and practically WASP only, and no women. But
it's a lot wilder and willier now.
Yeah, really. It's of course, that's only one industry where women are now taking an active role. I noticed in the criminal justice system, as a whole, women, judges, lawyers, prosecutors.
Well, it's the year of the woman.
Well, it's the decade of the woman, I would think. Well, Jane Chalias, it was great talking to you. I love talking about books, and I love talking about mysteries, which is a genre I'm particularly fond of. Very nice having you in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.